The provincial government is certainly convinced that attracting more people is an important part of any growth strategy. Professor Irvin Student from the University of Toronto, however, takes that idea to the next level. He's arguing that Canada should grow its population to 100 million by the end of the century. That's essentially tripling the current population. He's the president of the Institute for 21st Century Questions, among other things, and he's giving a talk at Mount Allison University tonight. We reached him on his way there on a cell phone at the airport. I began by asking why he thinks the population needs to grow to 100 million.
Oh, there are a host of reasons, but we'll put it into two categories. The first is metaphorical. That is to say, what is the big lesson that we Canadians should get from Brexit a few months ago and the new U.S. presidency and the new U.S. leadership class? I think the strategic and metaphorical lesson for Canadians, it is the following. We should be thinking for ourselves. That is, we have to build a Canada where we are not just psychologically thinking for ourselves, but we have resources to do so. That is, cultural resources, economic resources, and a lot of that depends on democracy. So we're going to have to get much bigger in order to make our own decisions politically, strategically, in what promises to be a much more difficult century for Canada. First point. In policy terms alone, and this is interesting for Atlantic Canada in general and the Maritimes perhaps in particular, we need more people to build up national institutions of scale and size so that we can do our own thing. I mean, I'll take, to begin with, our favorite sport, which is hockey. And I always say, even as a Torontonian, I say, how come the Maritimes has not a single high-level or professional hockey team, or indeed a professional team in any sport in the major leagues? And the answer is invariably demography. But that translates also to other spheres, science, business, the academy, and even international affairs. So demography is the de facto of power and influence that Canada is missing. We have territory, we have natural resources, we have stable government, we have high education. We lack the people, the density, the competition, that strange brew that happens when many people work on common projects together and compete amongst themselves, but for the greater good.
This involves sort of a changing in thinking, I think, a little bit for Canada. I mean, Canada is well respected around the world, but I'm not sure that influence has been a Canadian ambition.
The strictly patriotic argument. That is, a proud Canadian, obviously we want to influence the world, we want to influence the human condition, but even for our own existence this century. Don't forget that countries have a shelf life, and even before 1867, earlier iterations of federal projects in Canada had a limited shelf life. We were at 150 years of peaceable existence, we're a happy country. That doesn't reproduce itself on its own. We need to create the conditions that make for a successful 21st century in Canada, because you see that other countries and other continents are having a much more difficult time of it, and we can paint strategic futures where Canada has a similarly difficult time unless we get our act together. So psychologically, it's a way of really thinking about the future. I'm not wed to the figure of 100. It could be 80 million. It could be 110 million. For all intents and purposes, Canada doesn't have a carrying capacity that limits itself to any of those numbers. We have a very high carrying capacity, both naturally and politically. The point is, can we think long-term? Can we get young Canadians to dream about their country over the course of a century? Don't forget our politics. We're democracy. We're happy democracy. Are very short-term. Elections happen on very short cycles. So we don't have the capacity as a country to build some sort of mental picture well beyond 3 or 4 years. And this is thinking out to the end of the century. And population is a way of talking about many other projects.
If you do accept the idea that growing the population is important, really immigration would be the only way to really tackle that. Certainly in New Brunswick, the government has made that a priority. But how do you do it? I mean, what policies do you put in place to encourage people to come here?
Well, let's talk about Canada in general, and then we'll get to the Maritimes in just a second. Of course, there are three ways to grow a population, and only one of them is credible for Canada. One is grow the birth rate. That is impractical, I think, over the long term, and the results have been very variable and unstable across countries, including in Canada, although we've had some sporadic successes. Second one, I say this tongue-in-cheek, is annexation. Of course, many countries, including Canada, and the United States and other countries have grown through war. None of those is practical, and the second one is certainly not desirable for Canada. So we're talking about immigration. But again, I have to warn that the 100 million proposition is not just about immigration. But obviously immigration is the way we'll largely get there. So how do we get people? Well, we already get a huge number of people per capita when you compare against other nations. Almost 300,000 per annum. The proposition would be to grow it over time to 400, a little bit over 400, and we're well on our way. If we stay at the current immigration rate, we'll probably be at around 50, 60, maybe 70, depending on the variant of growth you're looking at by the end of the century. How do you get them to Atlantic Canada? Well, if I may, I think I've been making the argument for the last year that there is a golden opportunity right now to really package offers and lay out the red carpet, as we have historically, but where we've become a little weak in that respect over the last several decades, to countries that are close to us, even culturally and politically, where many citizens are unhappy. The American election, for better or worse, is a great opportunity for Canada to get huge talent. And I say this very seriously. It's obviously a very rambunctious country today in the social and political climate. There are many people that are highly educated, highly successful, in many cases very liquid, that would integrate very quickly. They need to be courted, they need to be seduced, and we have to offer them packages, just like Israel, Singapore, China, Russia, any number of countries around the world do when they try to compete for talent. And as the United States did over the course of the 20th century when they won all their Nobel Prizes, these were other immigrants from other countries that they courted aggressively. So American immigrants, British immigrants, all over Europe, there are countries with difficulty, with citizens that could easily integrate, and we need to be much more, I would say, aggressive, if not even promiscuous, in courting these people.
Of course, some parts of the world are experiencing a real backlash against immigration as well, in England, in the United States, in several countries in Europe as well. Are you concerned that an effort to attract this many immigrants could stir similar concerns here in Canada?
Optically, I still don't want the debate to be about immigration, as I say. It is more immigration, but not hugely more, first point. Secondly, it is over the course of a century. So let's not think about the country being flooded all of a sudden by whoever one is, people that don't look like us, I don't know how you look and you don't know how I look, but the nativist angst is people who don't look like us are flooding the country. That is not the proposition. It is to view population growth over the course of a century and having an endpoint that is desirable so that we can dream and be much more macro, and immigration will get us there. We'll have to up the quantum. I would say, though, this is a very deliberate policy point, we should be much more deliberate in distributing the population. I'm based in the Greater Toronto area. I've lived in different parts of Canada and many big cities around the world. It is not true that everyone should just naturally gravitate to the big city. There will be new big cities by the end of the century if we properly plan and dream. We need to think in those terms. A century ago, there was no serious city called Toronto. There was Toronto, but it was a small place. A century from now, if Canada is ticking over and doing well, there will be cities in the north, there will be bigger cities in Atlantic Canada, bigger cities in the prairies, Western Canada, and Toronto, of course, will be much larger, as will Montreal and Vancouver. I think that's all for the good, for the general picture I'm painting, but we need to dream beyond just 2 years from now when we'll be flooded by what we fancy to be more people.
What kind of a response do you get when you bring these issues forward with the people who are in a position to make public policy?
Well, I think I've been writing and talking about this across the country and also internationally for nearly a decade. And in my calculation, it takes 5 years for ideas to really penetrate into Canadian mainstream discourse. And in this case, it's been about 6 or 7 years. But now we have different institutes and different centers of the country that are actively talking about this. It's been formally advised to the Prime Minister by Economic Council. It's alive and well in the thinking of all of the cabinet, and indeed on a bipartisan, tripartisan basis. there are people that are actively mooting about it. Now, they don't all think about it in the same way, and in my view, we need to be a little more macro, not just reduced to immigration. But everywhere I travel across the country, the room starts out skeptical, and over the course of an hour and a half of speaking and then Q&A and then exchanging and taking on the possible lines of critique, people are moved and they get it and they get excited because it is a way of dreaming about the country rather than just imagining that the country will just be a constant reaction to a Facebook feed. We deliberately set our gaze to the end of the century. In some sense, as the founders of the country did, they were ill-educated, ill-traveled, not very wealthy men, in some cases women, who dreamt of a future that was improbable. And today we have the reverse. We have people that are well-traveled, wealthy, women and men alike, who think very micro and cannot think beyond a week from the present. And that's problematic because to do well in what I think will be a difficult century, we're going to have to work at that level. I have to run, catch my flight to Moncton.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And all the best to everyone in New Brunswick.
We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Irvin Student, good enough to pick up his cell phone while waiting for a flight at the airport. He's the president of the Institute for 21st Century Questions, also editor-in-chief of Global Brief magazine. He'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Crabtree Auditorium, Mount Allison University in Sackville. The talk is sponsored by the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies.